Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanley, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thank you for joining us. I think you're going to find this evening's program to be very informational, educational, and provide you with information about Lehigh University that you might not have been aware of previously. My guest this evening is Dr. Gary Sasso, who is Dean of the College of Education. But before I let him speak, let me give you a little bit of background about the College of Education. It was something that I was amazed to learn about as I prepared for this show. Percy Hughes arrived at Lehigh University in 1907, and he is credited with revolutionized teaching methods and access to the university, encouraged curriculum reforms, and worked tirelessly to make the university co-educational. And remember, that's 1907 that he was at the university. He created an extension program and summer courses that allowed women to enroll at Lehigh and brought the first female professor to campus to teach a summer psychology course. Mr. Hughes provided the foundation on which the College of Education was built in 1916. So it's 100 years now that the College of Education at Lehigh University has been in existence. And you're going to hear more about that as the show progresses. But first, let me welcome and introduce Dr. Gary Sasso, who is Dean of the College of Education. Welcome.
Thanks, Sally. It's good to be here, and thank you for inviting me to come. This is going to be a lot of fun to talk about the College of Education. I never get tired of doing that.
Well, that's good because you're in the prime position that we need you out there. But before we talk about that, let's talk about you a little bit. Can you give our listeners a little bit of background about who Dean Sasso is and how he got to Lehigh?
Sure. I have my degrees in education and psychology, in particular special education. My research for the most part over the years has been in the area of special education, primarily with children on the autism spectrum. Before coming here, I spent around 20 years at the University of Iowa. I had an appointment in the College of Education and also an appointment in the College of Medicine, where I ran multidisciplinary clinics for kids with severe behavior problems. I was faculty there for a number of years. I was also chair, and then I got a phone call from some folks at Lehigh in the College of Education asking me to come out and take a look, and I did. It was a relatively big change for me, given that University of Iowa is a large state university, and Lehigh is a medium-sized private university. But the move has been a very good one for me, and I'm very happy to be in a College of Education that's one of the highest-ranked colleges in the country.
Yeah, and that was one of the surprising facts that I didn't know. As I had said to you prior to our conversation, I was at Lehigh for a number of years, and I hadn't realized the potential or the strength of the College of Education. So your ranking is terrific, and I really want all our listeners to understand that that's there. Let's talk a little bit about the founding, and how is a university that's known for its engineering curriculum also one of the oldest education programs in the country. It was groundbreaking in 1916, and I know you've done a great amount of research. We have a book that was produced by the college on 100 Years of Excellence. How did that happen? I mean, Percy did it, but obviously he needed some help.
Yeah. Well, go back to Percy. Percy was a really interesting faculty member here. He was very, very progressive at a time when Lehigh wasn't known for progressivism. He was personal friends with John Dewey. He brought John Dewey on campus a number of times. The Hughes family looked at John Dewey as Uncle John, and he decided that we needed to be in the business here at Lehigh of training teachers and of doing some of those kinds of things. So he found a way to do that, and the way he found to do it was to bring women on campus for classes at night. And he had to do it at night because the faculty and administration would not allow women on campus during the day. If you recall, Lehigh was all male until the early 70s, and some of the faculty were worried that if they brought females on campus, that it would upset the sensibilities of some of our male students, which was really kind of interesting. If you look back in the archives related to that, he started doing that back then. It was not a college of education. It was not even a school of education. He just took it upon himself to do that, and that persisted into the 50s and 60s, and by the 60s, by 1965, Lehigh decided that we had done enough, that we had enough faculty, that we were doing enough that was consistent with what a school of education should do, that we should be officially a school of education. And that's when we were really kind of recognized as doing more. The reason I think that we're not known as well as other colleges, perhaps at Lehigh, is that we are graduate only. We don't have an undergraduate population. Mm-hmm. We're also located up on the hill. We're on the mountain. You know, anybody can see the tower sticking up. That's where we're located. So we're up there, and we work with primarily graduate students. And I think that's why folks don't know quite as much about us as others.
And the early program, Dean Sasso, was that also graduate students as well when it started back in the mid-1916s, or was that the evenings when they came on board?
It was more of an undergraduate training program. I think that it was based on a certificate only, so it wasn't even tied to a degree for the most part, not
yes,
even
that's
a bachelor's
right. I remember
degree.
Reading that, yes, okay.
The country needed teachers. The country needed good teachers, and the Lehigh Valley needed teachers at the time. And I think that's what Percy saw. He saw a need, and he not only saw a need for teachers, but he saw a need for teachers who were well versed in the liberal arts.
Okay. And was Mr. Hughes, Percy Hughes, originally from the Lehigh Valley, or was he from somewhere outside of? How did he get his connection? How did he get so strong about it?
I'm not even sure of that. I would have to go back and look at the book and see,
and see if that's I can fine. Find it. As you were talking, I'm thinking, what made him have this passion about Lehigh and the Lehigh Valley with his efforts? So
I think that he was, as you know, John Dewey was very, very concerned with education. I think through his friendship with John Dewey and in his discussions with others in the Valley, I think that just led him. And he was a pretty outspoken guy. You can look back through the archives. They used to have they would have a word-for-word transcription of faculty meetings and what went on in faculty meetings. And some of those were very contentious, and they were contentious because Percy was a pretty outspoken guy.
Okay.
When he wanted to do something, he didn't let go of it. And I think that's really kind of the only way it was going to happen.
Yeah, somebody with that strong passion. Listeners, I just want to remind you, and I want to take you back to 1916, since most of us were not around at that time. But the landscape at that time, Woodrow Wilson was president. He established the National Park Service. The first 40-hour work week was employed. Women started talking about and getting arrested for talking about birth control. The now oldest furnace of steel stacks was erected in 1915. That's the environment in which Mr. Hughes sort of put forward his passion, and it was the beginnings, I believe, of World War I. I mean, so there was a lot of turmoil and financial skepticism going on at the time that he started this. So, wow, what a great passion. We're so lucky that he's left a legacy for us.
Well, it's true, and there were a number of other things that were going on. One in particular in the country is that Sigmund Freud's theories related to the importance of childhood and of child rearing and how children develop when they're very young led to the first child labor laws. It led to a lot of folks talking about that period of time as the decade of the child. So there was a lot of interest in just children and how children are our future. I think that's really kind of the first time in this country that we started saying things like children are our future. Before that, there weren't that many protections related to how children were treated or how education was going to work, whether kids needed public education or not. So there were a lot of other things going on at the time that kind of led to a movement toward what we were doing here at Lehigh.
Yeah. As the program went forward, there are other leading edge or program groundbreaking that occurred during this last 100 years. Can you share with some of our listeners some of the other things that maybe have occurred at Lehigh ahead of the rest of the curve in education?
Well, of course I can. I could do that all day long.
Okay, I'll time you.
Okay. I think one of the most important things that we did at Lehigh very early on is we recognized the importance of working with and finding ways to work with kids who had learning problems and behavior problems. For the most part, prior to some of the interest in the 60s, which is when we started doing some things about that, prior to that, kids that had those kinds of problems were either relegated to very substandard educations or counseled out of public schools altogether. A lot of what we started doing here, along with a number of people in the country, is we began to look at not only what are the best ways to work with some of these kids, and can these kids leave institutions, because that's primarily where those kids were, and come into the public schools. And if they come into the public schools, what can we do with them? How can we teach them? How can we help mitigate some of their learning and behavior problems? We were at the forefront of that in the 60s very early on, and that continues to be a real strength in our College of Education. A lot of folks, I think that colleges of education are just primarily concerned with training teachers. Our college does much, much more than that. We do, of course, have a very strong and robust teacher training program for general education and special education, but we also have very strong counseling psychology program and a comparative and international education program. We have the number one ranked school psychology program in the country.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Great.
And we do a lot of other things besides training teachers. We're very invested in research, but not just research for its own sake. A really strong research to practice kind of focus, and we've spent a lot of time in recent years working with our neighbors in South Bethlehem, working in the schools in South Bethlehem, creating programs that are designed to provide a relationship and a partnership between what we do in our College of Education and the schools here in Bethlehem.
And one of the research projects or ongoing models, I believe, that came out of the 60s was the Centennial School.
Yes.
And, you know, when I came back to the Lehigh Valley in the early 70s, that was one of the first things I heard about was a school, but I really didn't connect it with a college of education. Yeah. Let's tell our listeners more about the beginnings and what you're doing today.
Well, the beginnings of Centennial School, it goes back into the 80s. Some folks at Lehigh started working with folks at the State Department in Harrisburg. We were interested in a school and a program that would act as a place where the most involved kids in the Lehigh Valley and beyond would have a place to go. It was originally designed for kids that the school district could no longer handle, and it is kind of a last step before kids sometimes go to institutions or are homebound. These are kids with sometimes very severe behavior disorders, as well as severe learning problems, kids on the autism spectrum, kids who are pretty involved. And the district has decided that they need another place for them. We created that place in Centennial School, and it's designed for those kids. We contract with the district. We receive funding primarily from the State Department. They funded us since the 80s. But it also serves for us as a place where we can do research and where we can have a training program for our students, for our master's and doctoral students, to become trained and to learn how best to interact and teach kids with the most severe problems. And it's been incredibly successful, especially in the last 15 or so years under the leadership of Michael George, who by the way, is in his last year with us, and we are going to miss him very much. But it is incredibly successful. We are proud to be a part of it, and we expect to continue supporting that school forever, if we can.
Is this a model that other colleges have looked at, or are there similar types of schools in other places that you're aware of?
There are similar schools in the country. There are not similar schools that have an affiliation with a university and a college of education.
Okay.
And in particular, a college of education that that has that close of a relationship with the school, where we have a partnership that is mutually beneficial in the way it is.
Okay. And you're predominantly with the Bethel Mary School District as your partner. Can children from other districts come?
Yes. Children from all over the Lehigh Valley can come, even outside of the Lehigh Valley, if we can find a way to get them to the school. We currently have about, I think, 80 students right now. We would like to get a little bit bigger if we could. That depends on space. I've been working with senior leadership at Lehigh to see whether or not we might move that school back on campus. It was on campus for a period of time.
Yes, it was. Yeah, I remember.
Over on Goodman.
Right.
Campus. I'm working with our new president, Simon, and with Provost Farrell to see if we can find a way to get that school back on campus where it belongs.
Okay. It'd be a lot easier to work with it, and the kids coming there would have a different, I think, approach.
They would, and we could combine it with some of the other things we do at Lehigh. There, you know, we're talking about combining it with our daycare center and with some of the other things that we do, and have a place that is really child friendly and that represents our value and culture at Lehigh. Because it's not just the College of Education that's interested in doing this; we have broad support across senior leadership at Lehigh.
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful program. I know a few people who had gone through there as counselors and have gotten into other related social service agency positions once they left there, and their training was incredible.
Yeah, that's I'm glad you brought that up, Sally. I don't want to toot our horn too much, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Go, that's what you're supposed to do that here.
The people who go through Centennial, to be trained at Centennial, who teach at Centennial, who train as school psychologists or counselors at Centennial, we enjoy 100% employment. They are wanted everywhere. They are always the first ones to be hired because of the reputation of that school, and how well we do. That school is visited by people all across the country 9 or 10 times a year. The staff there, Michael George, is asked to go around the country and talk about the model because people want to implement that model. Michael has been involved and asked to testify at congressional hearings about how best to treat kids who are that severely involved.
That's excellent.
So it has had a national impact. We're just very proud of it.
That's terrific. And we're going to talk more after we take this short break. I'm talking with Dr. Gary Sasso, Dean of Lehigh University's College of Education, who is celebrating 100 years there, the College of Education. I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and I'm talking with Dean Gary Sasso of Lehigh University's College of Education, and we're talking about their celebration this year, which is 100th anniversary. But before we get into some of the information about how they've been celebrating and what they've done to support this 100th milestone, I did want to mention someone who was very dear to a program that I was involved with for children with learning disabilities, and that was Dr. Ed Shapiro, who unfortunately as a community we lost this last year. Mm-hmm. Ed was very instrumental when I worked on the board of the Hillside School in helping us bring education and knowledge to our teachers and to teachers throughout the district. And I'm sure, I mean, that was just a small bit, I'm sure, of what he did for the overall College of Education. Could you share some of his achievements, Dr. Sasso?
Yeah, I would be happy to. Ed was an incredible colleague to us, but he was also an incredible friend. We miss him greatly within the college, and it was a relatively sudden loss for us. It was not expected at all, and we are still recovering actually from the loss of Ed. He nationally he has been one of the leading figures in school psychology for at least two and a half decades. He was the man who created essentially curriculum-based assessment, which transformed a lot of what we do in special education and in the education of kids with learning problems. More recently, he was involved in response to intervention kinds of research that has been incredibly important in terms of how we move forward with kids. He was also the director of our Center for the for Research to Practice, and he had been doing that for at least 10 years up until the time of his passing. And that center was designed to foster research and grants and publications and outreach to kids, again, with learning and behavior kinds of problems. He is greatly missed, and we're moving forward. I just appointed a new center director, Dr. Lee Kern, who is going to move the center forward. But Ed will always be with us because of what he's done. He helped build what the college is today.
Well, and among other institutions like the Hillside School. So he has a lot of seeds that he's planted throughout our community. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a loss. Let's get back onto 100 years. I know what a job it is to do the research for 100 years and celebrating it. You've done a few major events at Lehigh already, correct?
We have. In addition to the book that we put out, the history book, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier, we had a number of people working on it to dig up history. Some of that would have been lost, and some of it was almost lost. We haven't done a very good job in a lot of cases at Lehigh of documenting where we've been and where we're going. So this was a major undertaking, and we're really pleased to have that. We had a celebration event in May where we unveiled the history book, and we had a number of speakers talking about the history of the College of Education and where we came from and where we are going. That was attended by the president of the university, our new president, John Simon, by the chair of our board of trustees, by probably 150, 200 people showed up for that.
Terrific.
A lot of alumni who flew in, actually, for it. So we were really pleased to be able to do that. We also kicked off a lecture series, the Stoops Lecture Series, that was funded by some of our emeritus faculty in celebration of the first dean of the College of Education, John Stoops. We brought in Pazi Salberg, who is an expert from Norway in education, and he talked about school reform. He talked about how they go about educating students in that part of the world. We oftentimes look to that part of the world because they do such a good job, and their school systems are always ranked very, very high, sometimes number one, along with China. But one of the things he did was caution us that that you can't take their model and just apply it to what we're doing in our country, because the demographics of our country is so much different. We have to figure out how to do it ourselves if we want to do better in terms of educating our kids.
I had heard, and maybe you can tell me whether this is myth or reality, that in some of the studies where it does rank the countries and what they do, and you know, China's always up there, that the method of reporting is very different in the countries. So there's a group of students that may not get sort of counted in their numbers, and that, so they keep that like the top layer.
Okay, so do you really, you want me to talk about that, don't you? I will. There are some countries, you know, I could name them, but there's a country that ranks very highly every year, and they only count the kids who are in a particular tier within their schools. They don't count all of the kids, and so that skews the result. In our country, we count everybody.
Right, so you're full spectrum.
That is what our public school system is designed to do. It is designed to be the engine of our democracy. It's designed to be the place, the thing that allows any kid to say, I can be president one day.
Yeah.
That comes with challenges, and there are challenges that are particular to our country based on our demographics.
So listeners, as you see those statistics in whatever magazine or article or on the internet, you know, use with caution, because it's not necessarily creating the same like situation.
I think that the other thing, that's exactly true. I think the other thing that folks might keep in mind is that when you see things or read blogs or hear things on the news, how we are slipping and how we are ranked number 15 or number 22 or number 23 in the country. If you go back 50 years during Sputnik, when we felt like we had done so much to make our school systems work better and everybody was happy with our school systems, we were still ranked 15th or 20th or 23rd.
I didn't realize that.
We have always been ranked around there. We welcome concern with our schools. We welcome people who are looking to do the things that need to be done to improve our schools. But at the same time, I think a little bit of reality is necessary within that to keep us from panicking just too much.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for clarifying that. You mentioned that the gentleman from was it Sweden? Norway?
Norway
was here and talked about sort of the future. What do you see as the future of education? Where is it going? What's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years? I don't think we can do 100 years at this point. But
yeah, I think there's no question that there's a lot of interest directed toward education now from a lot of different quarters. Folks are concerned with our students. We're concerned with particular demographics of our students. We know that for decades and decades, that African Americans and recent immigrants have performed at a lower level in our schools, we've had problems creating programs that help them as much as we might do it. We have been involved in the college with grants and research and programs designed to do that through our Center for the Development of Urban Educational Leaders. We're trying to prepare people for those schools directly to deal with that particular issue. We have a number of our alumni who have been very generous in funding us to find ways to deal with that particular issue. I think that is going to continue. I think that there's going to be a continuing conversation related to the role of charter schools and the role of private schools and privatization of schools and school vouchers and things like that. I think that is all good from the standpoint of a conversation, one of the problems with it that we've noticed and that we've been kind of involved in the College of Education is that it's become incredibly contentious instead of being something that we discuss and try to work out in a more equitable manner.
Or in an appropriate manner. I mean, the end result is we want to educate the kids mm-hmm. the best possible way. And if it's the charter school can do it or if the public school can do it, we need to work together regardless to make that happen.
Yeah, and sometimes we make decisions based on, well, most of the time we make decisions in this country based on political considerations rather than empirical considerations.
Mm-hmm.
We
yeah.
just do. And if you look, I just read this morning, there was an article about the failure of No Child Left Behind, that after 10 years or so, that it's shown no appreciable benefit to kids in this country, that the whole testing movement is now being questioned because it seems to have gone off the tracks just a bit in relation to teaching toward the test, whether or not the test really represents what students need to learn, whether we are creating or helping to create the kinds of adults who can participate as fully as we would like for them to participate in our democracy.
Yeah, one of the things that is concerning as a business owner and a part of the business community in the Lehigh Valley is that if students don't have a broad enough education to be able to adapt, because the world is changing out there so quickly, so if they're just focused in one direction and don't understand the skills of how to transfer them into a version 3, version 5, whatever it is, we're up a creek.
Yeah. We are, and we're honestly trying to impart that to our undergraduate and graduate students, but mostly our undergraduate students who come to Lehigh. That you know, it used to be I'm an old guy now. You know, you trained, you know, you prepared yourself for essentially one career, and you followed that career, and you followed that career path to being a dean. Kids today need to be trained to be much more flexible than that. Not only are they going to change jobs a number of times during their career, they may be changing careers during their working lives. So they need to be prepared, and they need to be adaptable. They need to be able to do some of those kinds of things. And as importantly, we need at the university to be able to adapt to what the world is looking like and what our students are looking like, because they're coming to school now much different than they used to be. They know much more. They demand much more. We have to figure out how to deal with that in a way that makes sense. And we're doing that through a number of programs. Maybe you've heard about one of them, our Mountaintop Project.
I did see it on the website. That was fascinating.
Right. Yeah. We're trying to create a space, whereby we can transform the way our students are taught and the kinds of skills they learned. It's going to be much more self-directed. It's going to be led by inquiry rather than sitting in a classroom being lectured to. We are pouring a lot of resources into that, and it's called Mountaintop because it's going to be located in those big bays that we bought from Bethlehem Steel,
okay.
Their research center. But it's really not – it's not a place. Mountaintop is really an idea, and it's an idea about how we train our students and what we prepare them to do. It's really kind of a pretty exciting time.
Can you give an example of how the students interact with each other at that program?
Sure. I just visited the other day. One of the projects that we have going in the summer with some of our faculty and one of our research scientists was a project surrounding a program that we have called Caring for Cambodia, and that is a project that is being funded by Bill and Jamie Emilio. Bill is an alumnus of Lehigh University, and he and his wife Jamie created a program over in Cambodia for kids to educate them, and they wanted to partner with us because we had the expertise to do the research and to prepare the students and to prepare the teachers and to do the kinds of things that needed to be done. And So our faculty did this summer was to bring in a group of students, undergraduates and graduate students, to work on the next phase of what Caring for Cambodia is going to be, and where it's going to go from here, and how we are going to, as a part of Caring for Cambodia, relate to the rest of the program, because it has a lot of different pieces that are fairly active. So that's just one of the things that we've done. I think there were 30, 35 different programs going on up there across all of Lehigh this summer on the mountaintop.
Interesting. If someone is listening and they're like the Emilios and they have a project or something that could use that kind of brain power and cooperative between the levels of education, is that something that they can come to the College of Education and just say, I put a request in, or...
Come talk to us. We're very interested in being more involved in those kinds of projects, both regionally, locally, as we are with our projects within the South Bethlehem area. We have any number of international programs. Over the course of the last 8 years that I've been Dean of the College of Education, we have been involved in over 20 countries. We have a hub for some of our work over in Athens, Greece, where we've partnered with the American College of Greece, and we train folks in the American schools over there in educational leadership programs or counseling psychology programs. I mentioned what we're doing in Cambodia. We are working in Germany. We are working in China. We're working in Indonesia. We are in a lot of different places, and we're trying to break in a bit more to South America, because that's been a real underserved continent.
Yeah, that's incredible. I didn't realize the scope of that program went so far. Yeah. Wow. So there's a good reason that the Star of Bethlehem is on the mountaintop campus area. So you're shining. You're shining all over the world with the programs that you're doing.
That's a nice thing to say. Thank you.
Yeah, that's great. One of the things that I think when I looked at the mountaintop program, what I really liked was the communication coordination, because as, again, in the business community, and we look at schools, all we see our kids texting, we're wondering if they're going to be able to talk to other people. And so what you're fostering there and the team approach is wonderful.
Yeah, we have a number of donors who are really spending a lot of time helping us to do that. This is something that's going to cost a bunch of money, and we are getting a lot of help through our alumni and through other donors. In addition to that, our trustees have just approved a $250 million. I guess it's a loan to us to upgrade our facilities, to pull together the kinds of things we need to do to really move Lehigh into the future. So you mentioned earlier, where are we going in the next 10 years? That's one of the places we're going. We're getting helped by our trustees, because they are really opening up their pocketbooks. They are helping us to find ways to do that. And some of the older buildings that we have on campus that we love them, and we're not going to tear them down for the most part, but they are in need of some help. And so we're working on some of those kinds of things. We're improving the labs for engineering and biology and some of our other hard sciences. In addition to that, we're working very hard to build an infrastructure that can support increased social science research and support for our communities.
Great. Listeners, you've got to stay tuned, because we have the closing part coming up after this next break. I'm talking with Dr. Gary Sasso, Dean of Lehigh University's College of Education. I'm Sally Hamlin. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610 610-
694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and I'm talking to Dean Gary Sasso, who is the dean of the Lehigh University's College of Education, who is celebrating 100 years this year in 2016. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the future of education, where it's going, and there are a couple of directions that Dean Sasso is looking at that are extremely important and sort of collaborative in nature. Let's talk about sort of this whole issue with charter schools, public schools. I mean, when you pick up the paper, they're sort of like going head to head right now. And as I read and some of the research and what you provided, that wasn't the purpose, correct?
No, it was not. In fact, charter schools were first. They were an idea of school unions, of public school union people. They saw them as a way to, as laboratories, whereby people could try out new kinds of things for kids, and the ones that proved successful could then be integrated into the public schools. So it was designed by people who were wedded to the idea of public schools, who wanted to use them as laboratories to create new and innovative kinds of programs that might be used in public schools. What has happened over time, however, is that they've become competitive with each other, with folks on one side of the divide who are arguing that public schools are hidebound, that they are resistant to change, and therefore more money should go into public into charter schools. On the other side of the divide are the public school folks who are saying, we are perfectly willing to do some things that are different. We agree we finally agree that there are some problems related to the size of our public schools, and that we are resistant to change in a lot of cases, and that is problematic. But the two sides rarely meet because they don't strike up a common kind of conversation related to what's best for all kids, because they both believe that they are best for all kids. And that has been an issue, and it's been something that our college has been involved in. In fact, I wrote a piece for Salon not long ago that discussed that was critical of some of the reasons why people might want to favor charter schools. And some of those things included getting their hands on the public school budget, because charter schools are funded through the public school budget. Some folks applauded that and thought it was wonderful that I said it. Other folks thought I was the Prince of Darkness for even bringing it up. So that's kind of the landscape. What we're trying to do in the college, not only with some of our faculty and staff, but with some of our alumni who are really interested in this, is trying to find that common ground. We have brought folks on campus to speak to that issue and to find common ground. We've asked hard questions. We haven't been afraid to engage in a hard discussion, and we haven't been afraid to talk to both sides. We have a really close relationship with Bethlehem Area School District and some of the other school districts here. We have relationships across the country with public schools, but we're also working with some of the better charter and private suppliers. And in fact, I just got back from a trip to the University of Chicago where the KIPP program was engaged in some of its training of some of its school leaders, some of its principals. And
KIPP, the KIPP program is?
KIPP program is the Knowledge is Power program.
Okay.
It was started by a man named Richard Barth. He is still the CEO of KIPP. I have reached out to him. We're going to go visit him to talk about how he does some of his training, because I was incredibly impressed with how they work to train their leaders in their schools. It is very directed. It's very didactic. It's very behavior analytic, which I love. So we're going to go talk to him and see whether or not there's some way that we can incorporate some of what he is doing into some of the training that we do for our educational leaders. And I would also like to talk to him about a similar kind of training program that emphasizes real-life kinds of situations and how you would respond to those situations for some of our teachers. Because I feel that we don't do enough of those kinds of things to provide them with an opportunity to see what it's going to be like when they get out there and to respond to some very hard situations that they're going to face in schools. Teaching is hard.
Yes, it is.
It is demanding. And oftentimes teachers don't get the kind of credit that they deserve for what they do. That's one of the things that we noticed with Posy Solberg when he was here is that over in Norway, they recruit for teaching their best and their brightest. They bring them in. And they bring them in by offering not only incentives, but by paying their teachers at a much higher level than we pay our teachers here in the United States. And that tends to bring in the best people,
mm-hmm.
the smartest people. It would be nice if we could incorporate some of those kinds of things into our political process here in the country.
Now, as you bring these individuals on campus or you talk about some of the ways to approach the future in your teaching, you've got the graduate students, so you've got the master's and you've got the doctorate students. Do you do earned service for the districts by any chance?
Yes. In fact, we have seen that in the last couple of years. We've really ramped up what we're doing in terms of doing in-service kinds of programs in relation to additional training in areas that are important. We have a group of faculty on campus who really represent our future and who are working in early development and early childhood education. We have spent a lot of time working with some of the school districts doing those kinds of things. We have a leadership program that's been ongoing for decades where we bring in school leaders and budding school leaders to talk about issues related to what they're doing and how to solve problems. It allows district leaders, superintendents, and principals to talk about shared kinds of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing a whole lot of that and much more of it and doing it in a much more focused way so we can provide, give something back to the districts and be more involved with them. On top of that, I created a couple years ago a scholarship program for district teachers, whereby the teachers can come to Lehigh, be trained in regular education or special education, get a master's degree, working toward that, and we will pretty much pay for all of their education. They can come tuition free.
Nice.
So we're trying to do that as a way to not only be more involved with our community, but also because we're a little bit arrogant and we feel like we do it better than everybody else and we want them to come to us.
Well, and you know, a number of our principals and leaderships within the school districts have gone through Lehigh's programs.
Yeah, almost every superintendent of schools in the Lehigh Valley have been trained by us.
Yeah.
The most, as I mentioned earlier, the teachers who are most sought after, not only here but nationally, are teachers who have gone through Centennial School.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty proud of what we've been able to do. So we try to build that into some of the issues related to charter schools and to school reform kinds of issues. We're not expecting that some of the contention surrounding that is going to go away right away.
Mm-hmm.
We are dedicated to seeing it through, to make sure that whatever we decide to do is what is best for kids rather than fulfilling some political platform.
Yeah. No. Well, then that's where everybody's vision should be, you know, everybody guiding together. But, well, now I'm an outsider here. So when you say regular education, and I heard you say sort of preschool or early childhood development, so if someone is going to the College of Education, they can get specialized in early childhood all the way up through secondary or post-secondary?
Absolutely. Yes, they can. We're strengthening our early development program, our early childhood program. As I mentioned, we have about six faculty across a number of different programs who've put together a group who are writing grants, who are doing research, joint research, I need to start over on that.
Okay. So do you want to start at the very beginning?
Sure.
Okay.
Bob, that one.
Yeah.
Okay. As far as the scope of the education for the regular training, I mean, it seems to be early childhood development all the way up and secondary, post-secondary. Is that correct?
Yes. We work with students to help them work with children from infancy all the way up through high school. We have a group of faculty who are really interested in early development all the way from infancy up to about third grade. They have written grants together. They're doing really innovative kinds of things. We have a donor. In fact, that donor is Michael Golden, who is the CEO of New York Times Corporation, who is a friend of the College of Education, who got a degree in our College of Education, and who was helping us move that forward through a generous gift. We have that. We have joint programs. One of the only joint programs in regular and special education. In other words, when teachers come to us and they work toward a master's degree, they are not only trained in one, either special education or regular education. They get a dual degree in regular and special education. And we felt that was really important because more and more, with the movement toward inclusion of kids with disabilities into schools, those kids are in regular education, and so we need teachers who have the ability to work across all sorts of levels of ability.
And manage a classroom that has a variety of levels in it as well.
It's very difficult.
Yeah, I know at Hillside our classes were like 6 to 8 because with the various learning disabilities, it's, you know, they're not all the same, so they don't all learn at the same way or the same level?
They don't. And a lot of those kids, you know, back in the day, which is we're talking about me.
Both of us.
Yeah. Back in the day, there were separate classrooms for kids with learning disabilities, for kids with behavior disorders, for kids with mental disabilities, and they were all in separate kinds of classrooms. That's hardly ever the case now. Mm-hmm. Those kids are in resource rooms for part of the day. They spend at least, almost all of those kids spend at least a part of the day, sometimes all of a day, in regular education. It is only the most severely involved kids who end up in self-contained classrooms or who come to us to Centennial School.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very interesting. Now, a little earlier in the last section of our conversation, you talked about sort of the upgrading of facilities and buildings and stuff. Technology is changing so much. Is that the basic need that you're finding, that you've got to have everything wired appropriately and for the future of digital training?
Yeah, not only that. You know, not only that. That's one piece of it.
Okay.
But also, how do we train our people, or how do we teach our people to deal with that changing environment? Our faculty just created an online IT program, a technology program for students who want to gain skills and knowledge in that area. Not necessarily to obtain an entire master's degree, although they can obtain an entire master's degree, but they will have to come on campus for that. But there's an online program to teach them how to work with kids and how to work with changing technology within the schools. But you're right. We are spending a big chunk of that $250 million that we're getting toward upgrading our infrastructure in order to be able to do the kinds of things that we need to do going into the future. If we don't do it, schools that don't do it are going to get left behind, and we are not going to get left behind.
Yeah, and I think, and you talked about how difficult it is being a teacher today. I can't imagine being in front of a classroom where kids starting at age 3 are playing with cell phones and entertaining themselves and trying to maintain attention and, get knowledge across to them? I mean, you've got to be an entertainer, an educator.
Well, Sally, it's happening to all of us, right?
Yeah.
You walk down the street and everybody's looking at their cell phones and everybody's getting information in little bites. You know, we joke about it in the College of Education, that all this technology is, if it's doing one thing, it's training a whole generations of people with attention deficit disorder.
I agree.
Because they only pay attention for a few seconds before they're on to the next thing. That's one of the things we have to deal with. These are different kinds of learners. Their brains are coming to us different.
Yeah.
And we have to work with that. They're coming to us smarter because they're exposed to much, much more, sometimes too much more, than we were. So it's really an interesting landscape right now, and we have to work really hard to keep up. And so that's what we're doing. We're working very hard to keep up.
I did some research a little while ago for one of my clients, and it was on attention span. And there was a study done by, I think it was a Statista or something similar to that. If anybody's interested, I can get you the exact website. But they did something back in 2005 where they looked at the attention span of an adult, and it was like at 12 seconds in 2005. And then they did it again in 2014, and the attention span of adults had gotten down to 7 seconds, and a goldfish was 9 seconds. And I'm like, I've used this a number of times with my marketing clients because, you know, you've got to get the attention quick, not a lot of words, and move on.
Well, it's true. It's true. Just, you know, think about how we interact with each other these days. You know, it's in little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even, you know, it's not even email anymore. You know, kids don't care about email anymore.
Too long.
You know, it's too long. Texting is getting to be too long. You know, now it's Instagram, and I don't even know how to do that. But, you know, I mean, I've got a son who's in his 20s, and, you know, he doesn't want to talk to me on the phone. I will call him and leave him a message on the phone. He still lives in Iowa. I'll leave him a message on the phone, and a day later, I will just get a text back, and all the text will say is, what?
Different.
Yeah, and, you know, he's my son, so, you know, I have to refrain from killing him, but that's the sort of thing that, you know,
that the teachers are dealing with.
Yeah, every day, and they've got a whole classroom.
Oh no,
of those kids.
No, that's too much for me. That's why I didn't go into teaching. We have just a few minutes left, Dean Sasso. What would you like our listeners to keep in mind as we close the show about the College of Education and its importance and what it's doing?
I think the main thing is that I would like for people to know is that we work very, very hard up there to be responsive to both internationally and nationally and regionally and even locally to our constituencies. That we are really concerned with the best available knowledge production. We are dedicated to producing new knowledge concerning how kids learn best and how best to treat kids and how best to do policy for kids. But we're not just interested in that. We are interested in once we do that, then in integrating those kinds of models into the schools, into the community, that we won't be a group who advocates for any program and until it's at least received some empirical attention. We aren't going to go with fads. We aren't going to be beholden to political notions of what we should or should not be doing. And we feel that is incredibly important because it's maybe the only place left where that sort of thing can happen.
Dean Sasso, thank you so much for sharing with us not only the 100-year history of the College of Education at Lehigh University, but also a bit of the future and where you see things going. I think our listeners got a lot of education this evening, so thank you very much for that.
Thanks for having me, Sally.
Sure. Listeners, thank you for listening to us at Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.